Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. It is my great honor to welcome my friend Scott Shute to the CLC podcast. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Scott was working at LinkedIn, and his positions there included the VP of Global Customer Operations for a very important job. And then he moved into a new job that was never before created as the head of mindfulness and compassion there. And now he is an award-winning author and speaker and entrepreneur and healer and so many things. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm so excited to be talking to you and hearing what you're up to. So talk to me now about, you and I talked about these two parts you have in your world.
Yeah.
One is inspirational, and then one is tool, like a toolbox.
Sure.
That you can use at your desk. So
sure.
Tell me how that evolved and tell me more about each of those areas.
Sure. Well, for the last few years, starting when I was at LinkedIn as the head of mindfulness and compassion, I had this mission, which I still have. It's to change work from the inside out. And the other part of that, the below and how to do that, is by mainstreaming mindfulness and operationalizing compassion. So that's kind of like my core in the world of what I'm up to. And how I think about that, I left LinkedIn a year and a half ago. I wrote a book during COVID time, and now I'm out in the world trying to make stuff happen and making it up as I go along. And as I think about making stuff happen, there's a couple different parts. This first part you mentioned is you could lump it into a circle called inspiration, right? The book was that when I do speaking events, when I am out in the world doing coaching, doing whatever, that's hopefully giving a beacon of, hey, this can be better. By this, I mean work. Our lives can be better. We spend so much time at work. Let's make it amazing. And so that's my message to people, is it can be amazing. And then there's the second part of my work, which is the practical. You know, I was also, as you mentioned, I led operations for most of my life. I'm an ops guy. And so what I want to answer is the question, okay, well, that's cool. What do I do when I go back to my desk? And I want to provide tools and resources and data and science and ROI and all of that stuff that takes this beauty and wisdom that we have learned from the very hard earned wisdom of living, you know, and studying wisdom traditions and all those things into an organization or a company and actually get stuff done, to operationalize that compassion, to operationalize conscious business and make it not just like, oh, this is a nice thing to have, to make it, no, this is business critical. We are going to be more successful as a business when we operate this way. That's my vision for how this should all work.
We'll circle back to the work and changing work, which is so exciting. But I want to pause here and have you tell a little bit of your personal spiritual story.
Sure.
Because I think that's foundational to who you are and why you're different in the world of work.
Yeah. I started my journey, I always felt like I had this really deep connection to the divine, whatever you want to call that. I was part of a family tradition, a religion that I didn't really get. It didn't really speak to me. And the long story short is I found something different when I was 13, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. My brother introduced it to me, and I had been kind of asking all these questions when I was 10 or 11 or 12 about the nature of the divine. And I was getting a lot of answers back that just didn't make sense to me. And when I finally found this different path, literally I started weeping. My brother was talking about that it existed. And I felt like I had come home to something, and not I was 13. Not that I'd been looking for it since I was 11, but like I'd been looking for it for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, like it was two parts of a magnet that had been separated and were finally like pulled back together. And so that kicked off this internal journey for me, a contemplation practice, essentially. The journey to the inner worlds and the journey to trying to discover who I was, to make sense of my own life, but then to make sense of the world around me. And it's been a big part of who I am. I was leading sessions in college. Later, I became a member of the clergy as part of my spiritual tradition. I'm pretty, I don't necessarily say what my spiritual tradition is because I want to be neutral out in the world. I don't want people to see me as, oh, you're just proselytizing this one thing. Like, no, I think all spiritual paths are totally valid. I just happen to find one that really works for me. And I hope everybody finds the thing that works for them. So I brought that passion to LinkedIn, and I discovered that it was this wide open place. Our CEO was talking about his own meditation practice. He was talking about compassion and acting compassionately and telling his own story of how he had not at all been compassionate before in his career and the power of making that change. And, long story short, over the course of 6 or 7 years, I was able to create first a volunteer position and then a full-time job out of this mix. So I feel pretty blessed to be able to blend all of these parts of my life together.
I love that you had that experience when you were 13. I work with a lot of teenagers, and I guess I'm just gonna say let's be open to learning these things earlier. What learning about our path, exploring a path, finding peace.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, and it's so unlikely that you go to work for a tech company, and then you get this job where you can really be your whole self.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about what that was like, first as a volunteer and then as a leader in a
sure.
big company.
I think it was a pretty magical moment for me because I had reached this point in my life where I was senior enough in my role that I knew that if I got fired or whatever, like I was fine. I was going to get a job somewhere else. I'd also reached this point in my life being at that time kind of in my 40s where I didn't really care that much about what other people thought of me anymore. And so I was comfortable in my own skin. And so in this moment, I had this idea. I was meeting with my friend who runs corporate wellness, still does at LinkedIn. And I was asking him if we ever did anything about meditation, because a lot of what I saw from him and his group were around sleep or hydration or exercise. And he started to tell me that, oh yeah, we've done some stuff about meditation in the past. And he could see this look in my face, like, wait a minute, do you do something? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, could you do something? I'm like, yeah. And I got really excited about it. And he got really excited about it because here was this VP who was gonna volunteer to lead a wellness program. How amazing was that gonna be for his program? And so I got excited. I went back to my desk and I did absolutely nothing about it for 3 months. Because I was terrified, right? Because I grew up in a farm in the middle of Kansas, in very rural Kansas. And when I found this different path when I was 13, my parents thought that we had joined a cult. They wanted to have us deprogrammed. So we learned to be very quiet about it. We learned to not talk about it. And so, in today's world, we'd call it covering. I was covering this whole part of my life. And here it was, this opportunity to do exactly what I wanted to, which was to be my full self. But when given the opportunity internally, I was like, oh, this is scary. I'm actually not sure I can do this. And for me, it's kind of to get over the hump. I went to go see my other friend, who's the VP of HR, ran the leader of HR, and about something else. And my hand on the door as I was leaving question was, hey, I was thinking about leading this meditation session. What do you think about that? And her face lit up. She's like, oh, that's amazing. That's great. Let me know how it goes. Well, yeah. So now I'm on the hook for it, which was exactly what I needed. It's like, oh, I got the permission. It's kind of like a child. Like I'm still a child asking for permission. They said it was okay. So, okay, I'm going to do it. You know, and that first time, that first session, whatever, 4:30 on a Thursday, we advertised a little bit. There was one guy there besides me. You know, so here we are sitting, doing our thing. I'm sure this guy was just as terrified as I was. You know, I never saw him again. But the next week there were three, and then there were five, and then it just snowballed into, you know, what we have now.
I had a similar experience like 30 years ago where I became a yoga teacher and I brought it back to a company and we called it yoga and three people showed up, and then we called it stress reduction and you know, 50 people showed up.
Exactly. This is exactly my point of the difference between what I was doing at LinkedIn and what I'm doing now. It's because at LinkedIn, I was building things and calling them mindfulness and compassion programs. And what I would find is, you know, there's 10 or 15% of the organization who's interested if we call it that. And some of them are still like nervously interested. Of course, some people are like wide open arms. And so now I'm trying to build things that are for the center of the business, but have mindfulness compassion at its roots. But we're calling it, you know, high performing teams or close knit teams and other things like that. So meeting people where they are, I think, is critical.
So critical. I'm curious about your decision to leave LinkedIn and go off on your own, because I imagine that's another pivot story. Yeah.
It is a pivot story. And let's see. It's really funny. Like, I was trying to decide. I had written the book. I had taken off 2 or 3 months to promote the book. And so for 2 or 3 months, I was doing my own thing. I was speaking and doing these engagements and promoting the book and living the life of not having to be in staff meetings. And then it was time to go back. My kind of leave, my self-imposed leave of absence was over. And so I went back to LinkedIn. And on day two, I was in 5 hours of staff meetings that had nothing to do with me. And I was torn. I'd been there for almost a decade. It was my identity. First, you know, I started at the company was 1,500 people.
Yeah.
And when I left, it's 20,000. I had grown up, I had helped create the company. So it was really a deep part of my identity. And I was trying to figure out what to do. I was thinking, well, maybe I could keep the title and just be like emeritus and do 10% of my job or 50% of my job. I was having, you know, my book is called The Full Body Yes. and the intention is to listen to that deepest part of us, which is sometimes hard to do because the mind is so loud that the mind gets in the way. And I was having a conversation one day with a friend, and I was talking about my dilemma, you know, should I stay or should I go or should I part-time? She's listening to all this and she says, you know what? I think LinkedIn is just holding you back. And I had never, ever had this thought, not once. But when she said it, I got the whoom, the full body yes. I'm like, oh my God, really? But still the mind is like, oh, are you crazy? How could you leave? Like, this is amazing. And so, you know, over the course of a few weeks, the universe made it super clear that I was supposed to go do my own thing. There was no question about it.
I so appreciate that story. And I have to say that as I've been an entrepreneur for about 24, 25 years, and sometimes I still miss having a boss and, you know, someone else paying for my health insurance once in a while.
Oh, yes.
But I always think about the fact that for 24 years, I have not been in a meeting that I didn't want to be in.
Right.
So for those of you that are scheduling meetings out there, our listeners, please think about whether everyone really needs to be there and see what happens.
Sure. That's for sure.
So here we are today. You're an entrepreneur, you're a writer. Talk to me about what you're up to and how you're helping people.
Sure. Well, I started this journey 1.5 years ago, now that I was a free-range chicken and out on my own with this book in my pocket. I started by doing speaking and coaching and consulting on culture, and I still do all of that. I love all of that. But my mission is to change work from the inside out, and I mean it for 3.5 billion of us that are in the workplace. So I realized that none of the stuff that I do scales, and I wanted to build something that was scalable. And so I started by building something for teams with the idea that it's a self-paced thing that teams could do together. And I'd curated the best practices that we were doing at LinkedIn, you know, some of mine, some that I'd borrowed from other people at LinkedIn, people like Fred Kaufman, people like my friend and previous manager, Kevin Delaney. This is the answer to, hey, if I were to leave LinkedIn and go to another company and try to recreate the culture or the amazing best practices, like what would I do? You know, and these are the best practices. So that tries to answer the question, what do I do when I get back to my desk? So this is our first product, this thing for teams. I want to build one for managers, because if we think about the power of managers, our relationship with our manager is the biggest factor in how we think about work. And how we think about work is the second biggest factor in our overall happiness, second only to our mental well-being. So just think about that for a second. If we want to change the world, like I think creating better managers is probably one of the actual biggest things we can do in any scope of anything to change the world. So anyway, my next
divine, it would be, it is a divine path to help.
Yes.
And I think we both know managers really want to do a great job. They just don't have the tools. And
yeah.
I don't know if you agree with this, but I grew up in an IBM family.
Uh-huh.
So I remember my dad going off to IBM school and learning how to be a manager. He was an engineer.
Yeah.
And they understood that engineers didn't necessarily know how to manage people. So they invested a lot of time and money in him and others to develop their managerial skills. And I feel like in a way that's kind of gotten out of fashion.
Unfortunately, I read a stat the other day. I got to figure out where this was because it's powerful. The average amount of time when someone receives their first manager training is 5.5 years after they start being a manager. The average. And it doesn't take long to look around and realize, oh, that's why. That's why only 20% of the global workforce is highly engaged. You know,
and
it's a direct correlation.
Our friend Nicholas posted something about imposter syndrome. I'm like, well, if we oriented people, gave them a job description and actually taught them how to do their job and prepared them for their future work instead of catching up with what they already do.
Right.
I think less people would have imposter syndrome because they would be prepared. But I think we're this just in time training's gotten out of hand if managers don't get training except for 5 years in, right?
Yes. And we should give people, there's tons of people who want to be a manager someday.
Yeah.
We should be giving them training along the way so that they can see what's behind the curtain. And then they can make a choice. It's like, oh, I just wanted that because I wanted to make more money. Or, oh, I wanted that because I actually think I'll be good at it and better at it than my other job.
Yeah.
So we should start much earlier.
Yeah. And I think it's not for everyone.
No.
I was just talking to a CEO this week and he was like, you know, people are really surprised when they learn how much time I spend on other people and personnel problems. Like,
yeah,
I think they just think I sit, you know, and I don't know what they think I do, but I spend a lot of time talking to people and about people and helping people grow. So could you give us a little sneak peek of what is in this fabulous toolbox for teams? Like,
sure.
What's a quick tip or something that will help people right away?
I'll give you two easy ones. And then in the thing we go deeper, but the first two are all about getting to know each other. Because, you know, at work, oftentimes we have this really surface level relationship with other people, which leaves us dissatisfied and lonely, right? There's this global pandemic of loneliness in addition to the pandemic. So the first one is called The 7 Minute Story. I got this from my friend Kevin Bitlaney. And the idea is you just hold space for each other to, on purpose, tell the story of your life in 7 minutes. And the other person is just silent. They're just listening. They're following along. And then at the end of the 7 minutes-ish, they ask some questions and then you switch. It's super simple. And what we find is I've worked with people for 5 or 6 years, and then you do this technique, you do this, you hold the space like, oh my God, I never knew that about you. It's really, really powerful. And the second one is we create a working with me guide, which is like a user's manual on how to work with me. It includes things like, here's my likes and dislikes. Here's my expectations of you. Here's what you can expect of me. Here's how I like to get feedback and give feedback. Here's my communication style. As an example, if I send you an email on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, when do I expect a response? Is it 10 minutes later or is it not till Monday in the afternoon? So all those things. And what we find is there's so many lessons within the lessons. As an example, when we do 7 minute stories, what we're also teaching people to do is to be present and listen. When we do, the working with me guide, this is a lot of self-awareness. It takes a lot of self-awareness to write a 2 or 3 pager. I had a group I was working with, just happened to be a group of engineers. I don't want to generalize, but some of these guys, and yes, they were all guys, they'd never asked themselves some of these questions. And so it became even more powerful because they were not starting from a running start. They were starting from, further back. So these are some of the things. And then, as we get beyond the individual, then we start getting into the work of the team. We talk about the purpose of the organization and how to connect the dots between the work we're doing as a team to that overall purpose. We talk about how we're all in it together, meaning regardless of if you're an engineer or a finance person or anybody, your primary job is actually not to be an engineer or a finance person or an HR person. Your primary job is to help the organization be successful. And that I found was the most powerful concept, the story we would tell at LinkedIn. We were growing, my team was growing 70% a year for 7 or 8 years, right? And in that incredible growth, it was critical that our culture was strong to hold it all together. And these stories that we tell are incredibly powerful. And then we get even the hardest when we do, which I won't go into, but it basically tries to eliminate office politics because that is
I
the
love it. Well,
scourge.
that's worth signing up for this program right there.
Exactly. And it's
Good
just
for
one
you.
simple concept, and if you get it right, you eliminate office politics.
And so this program is self-directed and self-paced, and is it for teams more than it is for managers? Is that right?
It's designed for teams, so it's designed to be self-directed. So, as an example, a director with 7 direct reports could use it with their team. And if those, let's say those 7 people were senior managers and they had a team, they could use it with their team. So it cascades. And there's also the option to bring me or other coaches or leaders in to do some of the trickier parts, or to do live sessions with the more senior people, and then use the changing work tool to cascade the rest of it through the organization. So it's essentially built to be a scalable operating way to answer the question, what do I do when I go back to my desk? But it's really, what do we all do when we go back to our desks?
It sounds amazing. Good for you.
Thank
Excited
you.
to deep take a deeper dive into that. So tell us about your book and your speaking. I see you're going to do something cool in Mexico. Tell me
Oh,
all about
man.
that.
Yes, everybody should come.
Wish
Well, yeah, for
I could.
sure, for sure. The book itself, it's called The Full Body Yes. It's essentially about how do we listen to that deepest part of us, which is connected to whatever you want to call it, to the divine, to the part that knows whatever in this busy life. So it's a collection of stories of for sure when I've gotten it wrong. And sometimes when I've gotten it right or seen other people get it right. So it's very story driven. It's one I think it's not one of those boring business books. So it's fun. And so from there, I'm using those same stories when I'm out in the world speaking. And so part of what I do, there's if you're familiar with Chip Conley started this thing called the Modern Elder Academy. And it's basically a way of rethinking how we age, which is really interesting. And it's not just for people my age, I'm in my early 50s. It's for all of us as we age and we're thinking about the transitions in our lives. And so I'm a guest faculty and also facilitator at MEA, the Modern Elder Academy in Baja. And also will be living there kind of part-time. So I'm excited about being part of that community and just, every time I go there, I meet really, really extraordinary people. So that's fun for me and fun for people who come too.
And you're co-facilitating a retreat in June or something? Is
Yeah,
that what it
in June. Yep. We're calling it Happiness from the Inside Out, which is it'll feature some of the content from my book. But it's about half content from MEA, the Modern Elder Academy, about mindset and about transition and about change management. And it's about half content from the work that I've been doing around the full body yes.
Wonderful. And you've had this great experience at LinkedIn, and now you're out there helping other companies change. When you look into the future and you see a changed workplace, what does it look like?
Oh yes, I love that question. If only I had I have a dream speech like Martin Luther King, right?
You could
But
have a
here's
dream. He'll be happy to give you that
Oh, for
part. You could
sure,
have a
for
dream.
sure. In my dream, I talk about conscious business. Well, what does that really mean? So to me, a conscious company is a company who is balancing the needs of all of their stakeholders. So that means, yes, of course, the shareholders, because those are people too. Those shareholders are people who gave you money, and asked you to take care of it and to help, grow that money. But beyond that, I think business is more than just to be in business. It's to provide long-term value for your customers, to really provide value for the customers. This is why you're in business. And two is to provide value for your employees, to provide an incredible environment where they can do their best work, where they can grow even spiritually, all parts of them. And so what's really interesting is that the research shows that companies who act this way are actually more profitable. So Raj Sisodia and the team that wrote Firms of Endearment and later Conscious Capitalism found that companies who operate this way, and by this way, I mean they create a balance among all of their stakeholders, were 14 times more profitable than the S&P average. And so my dream for this is that people demand conscious business practices, right? I would like to see, if shareholders are having some big strike about the CEO, shareholder action or activity, it should be because the leadership team is not treating their employees well enough, right? If they found out that the employees at that company are not getting leadership training until 5.5 years after, there should be shareholder action about that, right? And so I want to live in a world where the most successful businesses are successful because they're doing conscious business practices to the point where we're not even talking about it anymore. Right? We're not even talking about it anymore because it's obvious. It's so obvious that this is how you do things.
That's beautiful, and I agree. Amen to that. So what other advice, I'm imagining some of our listeners and some of our readers on Forbes really want to do this, but they've never had it. They've never experienced it. So it feels like jumping off a cliff with a blindfold. So
I can
if I'm a
appreciate that.
manager sitting in a company, a more conventional company that hasn't had the
Embraced.
experience. I'm sorry.
That hasn't fully embraced this way of
How
doing things.
where do I start?
Well, to quote Rumi, two of my favorites are Rumi and Hafiz. Rumi, both of them were Persian poets from a very long time ago. One of my favorites from Rumi is, "Yesterday I was clever and I tried to change the world. But today I'm wise and I'm working on changing myself. You know, this is partially why the subtitle of my book, it's, you know, the full body yes, changing our work and our world from the inside out. No matter who we are, it starts with us. It starts with us. So even if you're in the most opposite environment you can imagine, you can still operate from a position of authenticity, from that deepest part of you. Right? You, if you're a manager or a leader, you can still be a great manager or a leader. You can still, in whatever influence, sphere of influence you have, you can operate with these conscious business principles. And beyond that, you can be an advocate with your peers, with your leadership team. You can be an advocate. And if you find that it's such an uphill battle and it's just, you can't make any progress, then you can look in the mirror at the person who's in charge of your career and ask yourself if you want to continue to invest your time there, because you don't have to. It really is a choice. But for all of us, it starts with us. It starts with us.
And I think no matter what organization you're in, there's a hunger for this. There's a hunger for authenticity. There's a hunger for consciousness. There's a hunger for calm. Yes. I love Scott's story about having a couple of conversations at LinkedIn, you know, with the head of wellness, with the HR director. So try not to do it alone. Maybe find one person you can talk to, and together you can make ripple effects.
That's right. And one of the things that I know that was most powerful about LinkedIn was the CEO was talking about it, right? That creates an umbrella of safety. And so obviously the more influence you have, the more you create that umbrella of safety for people around you. And here's the thing, people are malleable to the culture. So as an example, I was having a conversation with my friend. We both kind of came up through the ranks at LinkedIn, and now he's a very, very, very senior person at LinkedIn. And he had come from a consulting background, a very kind of hard-edged, well-known consulting company. And I was having a conversation with him about the culture. And I was saying, you know, what do you think of the culture here? And how did it compare to, you know, to your previous gig? And what was that transition like for you? And he kind of said, you know, he was feeling a bit sheepish about it. He goes, the truth is, I'm kind of malleable. And what I mean is, when I was at the old place, I acted just like everybody else. But when I got here and I saw that there was an opportunity to be this other person, you know, it took me a little while, but I embraced it. And then not only did I embrace it, I was rewarded for it. I was rewarded for being a good person who's also demanding, but a good person at the core. And he ran with it. And now he's a poster child for this body of work. And so my point is, just because you think everybody is not doing it, doesn't mean that they don't want to, right? So just be the spark. You might light the whole place on fire.
And when in doubt, bring some data. You know, this 14 doubt, times more profitable pieces.
Yes.
Sometimes that will help change minds and hearts.
Yes.
If they haven't had the experience.
Yes. Actually, that's one of the, not services, it's one of the things I want to bring to the world is, Alec, my business partner, every time we see one of these studies, we've collected it. And so now we have over 100 studies, 100 factoids, 100 pieces of data that help reinforce this idea. And so if you need more data, you know, let me know. I'll arm you with an amazing amount of data.
I'll we also at Compassionate Leader Circle have a lot of data on our website, but I'll get Scott's as well to add to it, because it helps. So Scott, how can people learn more about your book and learn more about your programs?
Sure. You can find the book anywhere books are sold. It's funny. So yes, it's on Amazon, but at Barnes and Noble you'll find it in the business section, which I think is kind of hilarious. This is where my publisher put it, because the truth is it's kind of a sneaky spiritual book. And so, you know, but you can find it in the business section.
Written by a business guy, and I've read it, and it's wonderful. And it's not your typical business book. It's great storytelling. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. And for the rest of it, You can find out more about me and my website, scottshute.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. But this new project, if you want to do something with me around teams, it's changingwork.org. .org, because, you know, you're starting a business and the .com people wanted $5,000 for that.
You can use any URL you want for any you want.
That's so right.
That's the entrepreneurial tip for the day. Do not pay $5,000 for a URL if you're starting a new business. And just remember, everyone, you'll get the information on how to get rid of office politics if you learn about Scott's program. Yeah. So
that should be worth the price of admission, right?
That's worth the price of admission. Scott, thank you so much for spending time with me. It's great to be with you. I look forward to more conversations and collaboration in the future. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.